大家好，欢迎来到去殖民化时尚的播客。在这里我们要讨论怎么在课堂外思考去殖民化时尚，以及把这个观念带给更多的人。
Hello, welcome to this Decolonizing Fashion podcast, where we will be discussing ways of taking decolonial thinking out of the classroom and into the broader public sphere. I'm Ruth.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Yiling.
So, I suppose like we're thinking about ways that we can take like some of the core ideas of decolonizing fashion beyond like the classroom and beyond our immediate group, and like maybe ask what are some like what are the places that it could go, like who would possibly, or who would like benefit from it. And like one approach that I've heard of recently is sounds Jeremy Deller, who was on Desert Island Discs, and he was talking about the way he designs interventions that he takes out into the world, and that an intervention is a kind of production where it only comes into existence when it's in this like very like historically specific moment, and that all of the reactions that spin off it are the kind of like the artwork for so I mean, I suppose I was just thinking like what are some things from this class that would be worth taking out into the world? And then I suppose after that, we can think about like, what are some ways of doing that?
Yes.
So, I mean, I think just leave it.
Carry on. So kind of with that idea in mind, we spoke in one class in particular about Orientalism, which has kind of sparked this idea, but I feel like it's trickled down into most of the sessions, talking about kind of, I suppose, what belongs in a museum is one aspect of it, but we were looking at particular the China Through the Looking Glass exhibition that was held at the Met in 2015, and then obviously the Met Ball happened around that, and it's the idea of putting these fashion garments alongside museum objects within a museum, and kind of we had lots of discussions about the idea of fashion within the museum and whether fashion is art in that sense and whether it belongs there. But then the fact that this big ball happens in May and physical bodies are coming in with fashion inspired by the exhibition, what does that say that's different to what the exhibition set out to say?
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's an interesting start of discussion, because I guess it kind of falls down to, should designers be using this type of, this culture almost as inspiration for garments? Do they have the right to do that? I guess we were talking about a little bit. I don't know if that is relevant to this.
No, definitely, yeah.
What's your opinion?
Yeah, by taking this course, I think we really have the access to see people from different identities what they are thinking about fashion. And one thing I remember, which was very impressive for me, was the documentary about the Met Gala.
Mm.
And we both hear the voices from people in the West, and also you see there's a journalist asking questions to the curator and also the editor of the
Anna Wintour.
I remember this one question the journalist raised to them is like, why you don't look at the fashion, the culture in current China?
Yeah.
And Anna Wintour and also the Andrew Bolton, they think that, well, we only look at the culture in the past, before 1949. And I think really there are different ideas about fashion because people are in different identities.
Yeah. And I think there was like, they had this really kind of weird response to that. That
quite
like,
defensive.
Yeah, very defensive. Yeah. That they, the premise of the exhibition was not looking at China per se, but China through the lens of Western fashion, which is like absolutely the most colonial like way of it's par excellence colonial fashion, like couldn't come up with a better illustration of it, could you?
I think it's
really interesting to see that because probably both of them, they think each other are arrogant and rude by responding like in this way and asking those kind of questions.
Yeah, so that's like a good way into this, I think. So like, you know, when you use that discussion as like a, or that kind of tense question answer as like a model of how not to have these discussions, because maybe they're not so productive. Like, I think it raises the question, like, what are more productive ways of maybe addressing some of the same issues, but like with a different, you know, different methodology or something.
To play devil's advocate a bit, do you think that the Met, I won't necessarily speak for Vogue here, I think they're very different institutions, but do you think that the Met were trying to do that by putting on this exhibition, and they're almost trying to do it with the current exhibition that they've got now about Catholicism? It's all about the church and a lot of like Catholicism, I can't say it. But
the new one's about camp, I heard.
About what, sorry?
Camp.
Is that the one that's starting in May?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm talking about the one that's like current. Well, it must have just finished. Okay. So the one that's been on for 2018.
Okay.
So the one all about the church.
Oh, that was the Catholicism.
Yeah. So I wondered, the Met doing exhibitions like that, do you think they're trying to make, trying to provoke this discussion that we're trying to look at here? Do you think that's what they're trying to do? Or do you think they're doing completely the opposite?
What do you think?
I don't know this exhibition.
Take China through the looking glass, I won't talk about the new one, but so we're talking about the idea of talking about the themes that we have in this class over the last 7 weeks, about kind of conveying that to a wider audience so it doesn't kind of end when we finish our lectures, you know. So do you think that by the Met putting an exhibition on China through the looking glass, do you think that was quite a naive attempt to do that? Kind of get it out to a wider audience?
I wouldn't think it's naive. I think it's just a way people look at things.
Yeah.
There are always reasons why people are doing like this. I don't think we'll be naive.
Yeah, for better or worse, it's like the way they see the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think like that yours would be the really good faith reading of like
totally.
What the Met
That's
intended
how I wanted
to
throw
do.
It out there.
Whereas I sort of agree more with Yiling's take that it's a that just like a very flat-footed, you know, Eurocentric institution making a kind of weird survey show that sort of like, I don't know, like,
do you think it's almost like a tick list to say we've done that part of the world? Do you know what I mean? Like, okay, one of our major exhibitions is representing that part of the world.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you know, there's this like truism in fashion that, you know, the great like engine of fashion nowadays is China, like, via consumption. But, I mean, that, which is what that exhibition kind of underlines for me, that they see, like, China as only a site for consumption or a, like, very two-dimensional source of inspiration.
Yeah, for not something you immerse yourself in almost. That's from the...
Well, not something that, like, according to that interview that you mentioned, even has, like, a valid contemporary fashion practice.
Which
or
comes
one that
the
this exhibition sees as relevant.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like... Yeah. I mean, maybe we've, like... We've kind of, like... shot ahead into that, like, museum conversation, but it's good because, like, one of the questions is what are the social structures being challenged and what's our positionality. So, like, I suppose, like, maybe we can talk about that a bit, like, our position within, like, museums and at least educationally, and then, like, I don't know, this stuff about, like, kind of personal position, I find a little problematic.
Yeah, me too.
And I, I'd love to discuss that as
no,
well.
No, me too, I'm interested in that.
But I mean, like, maybe we can talk about institutionally how we, like what... in what ways we see ourselves as being kind of tied up in particular institutions.
Do
you think that's interesting? Like,
and that might lead to kind of us troubleshooting how we get decolonizing out there,
exactly,
out of the institution kind of thing. Well, how we use the institution to emit it to a wider audience. I don't want to call it audience, but society.
Whatever, viewership or...
Yeah. Do we want to keep it rolling?
Yeah.
Cool.
I don't think it costs anything.
So,
personally, well,
where we kind of sit within this, do you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's quite interesting for us on our course because we're kind of very... We've got two major, we're sitting in two institutions, so I feel like we can take quite an interesting stance at this because you've got the art school, which although in a lot of lectures we've been to, there's a lot of talk about institutions such as the V&A, you can't, I personally do think that us at art school, we are in an institution, you know, by coming to university you're in an institution, but then also we've got this other...
when you say capital I institution,
you know,
the Royal College of
Art
opposite the Albert Memorial, like it's sort of very imperial.
And sometimes I kind of do find myself, you know, head in palm in some of these lectures because it's like, you know, really, really digging at the V&A, but it's like, well, take a look around where you are as well. You need to be applying what questions you're asking to the V&A to your art school as well. So I guess where I've really struggled to kind of place myself within decolonizing fashion, I think, because it's quite a new subject to me. And also as like a white British person, I really struggle to, it's almost, to be completely blunt with it, I struggle, I'm a bit confused of what I'm allowed to say. And I almost feel like I should have a certain opinion on it. Which is quite interesting. And I think for me personally, coming from a practice background, and I voiced this a few weeks ago in one of our classes that we had, where I was before I started this course was that I was very much taught to take inspiration from other cultures and countries purely through a visual sense. So, you know, a lot of people that I've worked with would look at China for completely visual inspiration, and that has always troubled me a little bit. I've always tried to, if I look at something cultural or a different country, it's always something I feel like you should research in depth. But it's
stumped me a little bit. I don't know what you guys' opinions are of that, but I still don't quite know where I sit with it, because I think I have this new appreciation and understanding of these countries and how, as a designer, I shouldn't be, you know, just sucking all this visual information out of cultures.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And I think that's very apparent in Edward Said's work, who I think I have to mention because I've read him a lot recently. So I guess I'm kind of confused where I sit at the moment, but I think that's a good thing. I think this course has kind of opened my eyes a bit via academic writing, kind of on where I now sit as an artist. If that makes sense. Sorry, I've not articulated that very well, but I think I haven't got a set position now. It's challenged my position. I don't know if you guys have felt that at all on this course.
I think it's very interesting to hear that. For me, I think it's okay if we have different opinions on one thing, but the most important thing is we keep talking and we keep hearing from each other, we keep listening to each other.
Yeah.
And when you talk about the RCA, the image of RCA, I think it's a very interesting topic. For me, royal or something imperial is really something about the UK. And to be honest, I think that's one thing which attracted me to come to the UK to study. It's totally different from China. Maybe that could be a biased view from the East to the West as well, because we talk about Orientalism, it's the opposite of
Occidentalism.
So I think maybe people from the East also have some biased opinion about the West.
Just on that point, what do you think the reaction would be if in China they put on an exhibition called England Through the Looking Glass? Like, just to complete, or America Through the Looking Glass, because I know it was the States that put on, you know, the Met. What do you think?
Probably, I think people would talk about the royal family. The British culture, maybe in Chinese people's eyes, Shakespeare's, or maybe the detective, the Sherlock
Holmes.
Kind of
things. It's
quite stereotypical. It's sort of, I don't know, like, it's a good way of, like, looking at it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you don't, because it's about, like, looking at China through the West's conception of itself as the dominant culture.
Yeah.
So that, like, you know, that there's like this sort of inherent layer of kind of supremacist or what, you know, there's this sort of like ... after Through the Looking Glass, like, the dominant culture. So, I don't know, like, you know, I'd say, even in China, like, the dominance of, like, Western culture, you know, the way it allows itself to permeate Chinese culture is, like, still really intense, even though, like, China is culturally so different. The culture of the West is still like a really powerful force there. Like, I don't know, from the limited experience I've had in China, like Shanghai and stuff, like it's a sort of,
So where do you position yourself, to ask bluntly?
Well, I think like through the So through the V&A is like a particularly kind of Tweedy like national institution, and through the VNA, sorry, through the RCA as a very kind of elite and I don't know, kind of domineering institution that has like particular cultural cachet and prestige. Actually, I was listening to another Desert Island disc with Tracy Emma.
Oh, great.
Who was talking about getting into the RCA in the 80s.
Mm.
And, like, that it was this very crusty old white man institution.
Yeah.
Mm.
That, like...
Was it still residing in the VNA then?
No,
in
no, the 80s? No. I think
when did that happen?
It's been in this building, like, these buildings for a while.
That's a really stupid question.
No, no.
Sorry.
The... What was I saying? Yeah, I just, like... They're basically like, I wonder what ways those positions can be kind of inverted so that they become an advantage.
Yeah.
So like, you know, the great thing about being part of an institution like the VNA is that it's like a proper big institution, and that institutional critique works really well in those sorts of places, like that kind of Trojan horse style of critique from the inside is, you know, that it feeds off the kind of imprimatur of, you know, like the depth and age of the collection and the provenance of all the objects and like the how grandiose the building is and all that stuff. It's all kind of material that, you know, you can use to rethink like the way institutions work and the way people at large relate to them. And then the RCA, I actually feel like I'm not that involved with the RCA side of things. I feel much more involved in the V&A side. But, you know, I've been to art school before, and, you know, there is a kind of, like, can-do attitude at art school where, you know, you have, like, a lot of resources that are, you know, like, whatever kind of... It's like, especially in terms of producing stuff like 3D printing or modelling, like, you know, you have a lot of... resources to hand to help you know, make what you want to make. So I feel like a way of uniting those two things with, like, what Sarah was saying, like, that deep colonial message as its drive is, like, an interesting space to think about.
Yeah. When you guys talking about your opinion, I was thinking about the idea of globalization. In the class, we also talk about globalization, automata, right? I think the cultural communication between different countries, different cultures, they're actually driven by, accompanied by capitalism. So I think decolonize is actually anti-capitalism. Because when we push something, we transfer some kind of culture from one country to the other, it's actually some, I think it's pushed by what kind of culture can make money in another country. So
which is like what colonialism in the 17th century was as well, to an extent. Like, it's just changed now to a kind of market economy version of the same impulse, I suppose. Yeah, I think that's like such an interesting contradiction, or not contradiction, but like paradox, like within decolonial, like especially decolonial fashion, because like fashion is as capitalist as it gets, like, in a way, like in terms of having a very, being a very good metaphor of what a commodity is.
Yeah.
And, like, if like the colonialism is like this sort of structural capitalist thing, like what does it mean then using fashion to kind of de-link all of these bad associations with it? It's again, it's like that Trojan horse mentality, like you're using something against itself, you know, for your own purposes, which, you know, you would hope, you know, ethically and morally better positioned or, you know, less egregious, at least. Yeah, so I suppose, like, that kind of speaks to the need to turn, like, academic decolonial studies into, like, a more productive like thing, or like a, you know, a generative thing, like the kind of uses, what's a good way of saying it, like it sort of has to, like, bring the game down by playing by the rules of the game. So, I mean, that's, like, very much what Jeremy Deller does, I suppose, with, like, his intervention. So I think that's, like, a good way to, like, segue into thinking about what are some interventions that we could just, like, draw a very light sort of pencil outline around. You know, whether it's just, like, a location, a kind of gesture. Or
I think thinking of, I think a way to do it is you don't necessarily, I think kind of more extreme interventions are great in some ways, and I think we're at a really good platform, especially at the RCA, to, we've got a lot of creative people that would want to do very kind of, I don't want to use the word extreme, but, you know.
No, I know what you mean.
Out
like
there.
When I think intervention, I'm thinking like flash mob or something.
Yeah, so right.
It's like,
and I
such
feel
a
like
stupid...
you're in the place to do that. But I think it's just almost defining what decolonizing fashion or decolonization is. I think, again, talking about this from a designer point of view, me coming in, you know, I wouldn't have considered myself academic before I started this course at all. I was like a creative that did very much, you know, creative art things, and I have been since I was probably like 13 years old. So I think I didn't realise that I was doing some of the things that we've been criticising in this course. I think the Met Ball week that we spoke about, that was a real eye-opener to me, because I've worked in the fashion industry for years. And I think that that's a way that we can, as an intervention, that we can get it out there. It's just getting the idea out there and just saying, okay, this needs to change, and almost bringing it to the public so that they can address themselves. Oh, hang on, I'm kind of guilty of not understanding this, if that makes sense.
So, like,
so I'm not, I'm not very good at articulating it, but I don't, yeah.
I think that's fine. Like, but, you know, what you were saying before about, like, being able to define what this kind of decolonial method is, in a way. Like, for me, what's been really helpful is to, like, be able, you know, to just to use these kinds of ways of thinking about myself in relation to other things.
Yeah.
As, like, I don't know, the first step. So, you know, like what we were discussing about, you know, what is your positionality? Like, what are the social structures you're entangled with?
Yeah.
Like, and then from there you can start to ask more, like, once you know how you're implicated in those structures, then you can start to think about ways of working through that. But it's like, you know, like the really useful thing about decolonial studies is that that is a very hard idea to swallow, like just point blank.
So putting yourself in it, I feel like it does help a little bit.
Yeah, it's just
putting
like,
yourself
bit, like, you know, you can, it's, you can't conceptualize that complex web of involvement just like in one fell swoop. You have to sort of nibble away at it.
Mm. And I think if you put the aim, you know, similar to the aims of the course, if you were to write on a piece of paper and go and ask someone in the street, you know, this is what decolonizing fashion's aims are, I think everyone would agree with it. But I think when you start having the discussions with people, that's when you really start to place yourself in it and think, oh gosh, I've been, you know, the industry I work for is completely guilty of doing that and, you know, adding to the problem in a way. I think, and like you say, it's when you start almost, when you start positioning yourself within it, it's...
I think there's also this thing that once you are like, say like, decolonizing fashion was our introduction in a way to like decolonizing as a broader set, as a broader like intellectual framework. I feel like once you just have exposure to it in one like discipline or one area, that it like immediately starts cross, you know, referencing all your other entanglements and makes you look at the kind of networks. Yeah.
Which kind of links to what we were talking about last week about this kind of how things are linked and it's the unlinking.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think
yeah,
that all
yeah.
kind of draws in. Sure.
Totally. So
I have a question for you because before I joined here, I never heard about decolonize.
No,
me neither.
Okay, so it's just an idea in academia world, right?
I suppose.
Okay.
I don't know.
I think this is what we've been speaking about. It is very much an idea in the academic world that I've been introduced to since Christmas. Very, very recently. And I think, where are you going? That's a really good point. I do see it as quite an academic idea, and I think what we've been speaking about is how to take it from being an academic idea and presenting it to a group that isn't a group of academic students or academics, and kind of how you convey that to the wider audience and the wider society, because I think then that message would start to... we'd start to think about it in everyday life a lot more. It's having a conversation about it. We're having it with global warming and recycling now. It was very much a concept that was kept within a certain, you know, little bubble. And then as soon as you start talking about it, as soon as it's on primetime telly and things like that, it's like, okay, the wider audience is talking about it. So I wonder if you have a similar... going back to the idea that we were going to talk about strategies to kind of take it out of the institution, maybe that's, you know, it's kind of getting that to your mainstream audience would be my opinion on it, because I've not heard of decolonizing.
Actually it's kind of a question I'm keeping asking myself since I'm here, how we can connect the knowledge, the discussion we have in the academic to the practical world.
Yeah, so do I actually. Yeah. Since week one, it was, you know, we went to Ironbridge in our second week of being here, and, you know, I'm growing up in England and I didn't know anything we were talking about, and I was just thinking, okay, yeah.
Well, what you were saying about involving other people, so at the beginning of the class, I'm going to spill the tea here, I really scoffed at the thought of this being an emotional form of emotional labour. Like, I thought that was kind of I don't know, very foreign idea, and what I think I've realised is that the kind of awkwardness and idea of having to be emotionally implicated is that it has to, it's kind of like a virus, like you have to be infected by it for it to really like start to like coalesce with the way you think.
Definitely.
Is that like, I don't know, so you know, that that I think that works really well with interventions because like you bring it to the viewer or you know audience in a way that they don't, they wouldn't necessarily anticipate, like
yeah.
you know, can just be something that they happen across,
yeah.
and that the kind of fact that they're encountering it on the level of you know embodied experience or like the everyday
yeah.
or the real, yeah, it starts. Like it's like billiards, like you have to, you know, hit one ball with another ball to kind of move it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I've
because you can't just proselytize people. Like
yeah,
you just totally. I don't know, I just don't think
yeah.
it works.
I think it's when it almost hits home that kind of yeah, when you speak about something that kind of affects you on a personal level, whether that's emotional or not, that's when I think I really started to understand it. It's when we were talking about Matthew Williamson and his using, I can't think of the word, of his influences that he uses for his fashion collections. And yeah, kind of the mood boards he has and the images he uses. That's when it hit home with me that I remember that class really well, and I think I voiced this to everyone. That's when I thought, oh my gosh, I get what we're talking about now, because that's me. I would use, you know, without meaning, you know, I'm quite good at looking at people's good attributes, but, you know, I'd like to think that he didn't mean to cause offence or anything by using certain images and mood boards, but I think as a someone that's very visual and a designer, you do sometimes just think about, like I've said earlier in this podcast, you think about things purely for their visual attributes, which is awful. And I really, in that class, that just made me realise it, and it's putting myself in that position that sparked something in my head, and I understood why we were having these discussions and what this group is trying to achieve.
Yeah. Yes, you can have the best possible intentions,
yes.
but the way in which you've been trained and the whole way in which you think could implicate you completely in a set of ideas and structures that you wouldn't necessarily agree with, but
yeah.
you don't even realise you're part of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think after this course, I really want to lecture in textiles. It's something that I really want to do, and I think if I had a group of students now, the discussions we're doing in design meetings, I'd make it part of it. If someone presented me with a mood board inspired by Chinese, China, so it's questioning. So, okay, where has this come from? What, you know, just asking the questions and having the discussion is so important for the new generation.
Like China isn't out of bounds, but I think like, you know, you just have to hold yourself to like an ethical standard.
Yeah.
With.
And at least have the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, like try to engage with it on a deeper level than just a visual level.
That's something that's really like almost like kind of shocked me about this course, that, you know, the lack of a kind of, I don't know, ethical, moral perspective on design. It's sort of something that's been kind of tangentially approached in some things, like, you know, discussions about division of labour in early modern, you know, furniture making. I mean,
yeah.
that it raises questions, but, like, this is, like, the first class that's really touched on the kind of ethical entanglements that
yeah.
we need to think about design.
Yeah.
Through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was interested earlier, you were talking about decolonizing as an academic kind of event, as it were. And I was thinking that we've made it very academic, partly because
our brief this term is historiography, so we're thinking really hard about how academics work. So we've brought all these issues to bear on a very academic topic.
Yeah.
But depending on who you are, what country you've been brought up in, and so on, your whole life may be a decolonial struggle, completely nothing to do with academia. You may use different words, and there's plenty of writing that says academia isn't the right place for the decolonial struggle to happen. It's not, it doesn't belong in academia, and it should necessarily be taken there, and so on. So for our purposes, it's a very academic thing to be doing, but there are other times, other places, other people for which it would have nothing to do with academia whatsoever.
I think that kind of, sorry, I'm jumping in straight away. I think that it doesn't belong anywhere and it shouldn't belong anywhere. I'm glad that we've brought it up in an academic sense, because it's introduced me to the idea of it, and you know, like everything we've just said, that has resulted because we've had this course and spoken about it. But it shouldn't belong, like you say, it's kind of going to affect people from different disciplines, different walks of life. So I think that's just kind of proof that it doesn't belong anywhere. It shouldn't be a fixed entity. It should be something that's kind of global and just spoken about in a very organic and kind of collaborative way, almost a collaborative way within disciplines and cultures.
Yeah, and like relevant to lots of things.
Exactly, and I think it's making it relevant to things is so important. Yeah.